Okay. First of all, thank you very much for this invitation. It's also the first time that I come to Greece, which for someone coming from the Magna Grecia in Italy is a big shame. But thank you anyway. I also believe that this type of workshops, especially outside the usual university buildings, are very useful. Otherwise, as academics, we often talk among each other and then full stop, and we build our theories without anything in practice. Well, not always. Now, I think that the introduction has been very interesting, because there is an overall idea of crisis which should be actually explained. In my view, one of the problems is that for crisis, we often, let's say as public opinion, think about an economic crisis itself. Why I believe that an economic crisis, and I will try to explain why, is important, is increasing the threat of the far right, but is not always the main single, the only issue. So I will try to give some, let's say, little reflections on the far right. So now, especially since May and the European elections, media, not just in Britain where I live, but all around the Western world at least, started talking even more about this far-right phenomenon, often called populism and other type of things. And there is this idea of the rise of the far right. The far right is having a success. Wilders and Le Pen were building a coalition together. How this could happen? Is it possible that nationalistic movements are together to fight against Europe? The paradox of having anti-EU, pan-European alliances running for the European Parliament. And for some people, this is very new, this is innovative. A woman in this case, another guy not even looking as a proper extremist, as Wilders for some at least. And so something very, very modern. And also in the academic field, I have to say that there is this interpretations about not considering anymore some of these parties as extreme right or as far right, or considering this party family divided in various groups with the much more moderate one as Le Pen and Wilders, and some radical fringes outside them. Now, I think that there are lots of legends about this far right and right wing extremism in general, especially in public opinion and political debates. I propose, not only because I'm a historian, but I really believe that we should look at, when we consider this phenomenon, we should look at the history of Europe to understand how this phenomenon developed, when they developed, and if they are really new or not. So we need to consider Europe as a unified land with transnational exchanges, and also try to look at the national peculiarities which can help us to understand why eventually a phenomenon is developing in a nation and why is not developing in another place. So there are three different dimensions here. One is the European one, so the pan-European one. Another is the transnational, so across borders. And then we have national settings which need to be kept in mind. So, rise. Every time that there is a success of the far right, newspapers, political commentators, even some colleagues probably who are very happy to be on TV or on newspapers, they talk about the rise of the far right, there is a strong success, and so on. Well, this is not true. I mean, in the sense, okay, if we consider history as, I don't know, 3,000 years, yes, is something very new. But, I mean, we are living in a contemporary, modern, recent world. And there is nothing new here. It's not that Marine Le Pen got tons of votes and this is something new and it is a rise. Her father was similarly getting enough votes. Parties have been getting lots of votes in some countries. So there is no rise. It's a continuous, eventually, rise. Periods when some party get more votes, other period when they split, other period when there are new movements coming eventually out. So, but in the last at least two decades, there is a continuity of this phenomenon, which indeed is part now, more, much more officially, of our public political life. So there is no rise. Indeed, some of these parties even join governments at a national level. Some of them led or are leading, actually, regional assemblies, towns, city councils. So it's not a rise. It's a phenomenon which is there, and probably it has been overlooked for a long time. And another thing which I listed as the first point is that we need to keep always in time that rise can go that there are different successes in different nations, and so we need to look at all these dimensions when we consider eventually a rise. Now, it's not a rise because, I mean, if we look at the history of the post-war far right, let's say, the rise eventually started in the 80s already. Now, we are in 2014, so why we are talking about today about Strange, Wilders, Le Pen, and all these other people, we need to see, we need to deal with them. Well, we should have started dealing with them in the 80s when no one was actually dealing with this type of parties, because Jean-Marie Le Pen, in those years, leader of a minor party in France, a party was looking abroad, especially at the Italian social movement, as key example to follow. Indeed, same symbol, same everything was almost copied from Italy. I mean, Le Pen became the new king of European right-wing extremism, getting some excellent results in national elections, local elections, and European elections. So if we look at those years, immigration was the big theme in places like France. Once more, if we look across borders, the immigration problem didn't start in the 80s in all countries. In other countries started in the 90s. Look at Italy, where it was the Northern League who got votes politicizing immigration as a problem. But what happened in France in those years, in the 80s, so decades ago already arise, was also a politicization of this theme, immigration. Immigration became a theme to be debated in politics, when even mainstream politicians started talking in a sort of negative way, in a worrying way about immigration. So it became a legitimate item for discussion in those years. And then from the 80s onwards, we see in some countries more than in others, but certainly the rise of a multi-ethnic society, because in some nations these are also the effects of decolonization. In France there was also a specific political environment because socialists got to power, and there was an attempt by Mitterrand and by other socialist political elite to also to change the electoral system, because in this way they wanted to destroy the mainstream center-right in France. And another point which has to be strongly kept in mind, and which, in my view, we too often forget, is that for the first time, Le Pen started going on television, being part of a public debate. And in those days, the membership of the Front National rise, and it was a real rise. So these national settings have to be kept in mind. So we shouldn't just talk about today, but at least let's start to look at what happened in the first real electoral rise of this of these movements. So innovative, modern, moderate, and so on. Since these first successes of Jean-Marie Le Pen, everyone was strongly very interested in the far right, especially then since the 90s, you have tons of academic works on it, as nothing happened before, and so, wrongly I have to say, a good number of my colleagues started analyzing this phenomenon as beginning in the 1980s, as nothing happened before. So it was something which was completely new, innovative, and the magic word, populism. So this has been considered as a populism. In France, national populisme, something which could be understood only in the French context, not even far right for some even mainstream scholars, and certainly not for some of the media, not for some of the politicians. So this terminology, populism, national populism, in my view, academically, scientifically, and I don't want to discuss too much about this, but is fundamentally wrong, because in my view, populism is not an ideology itself. It's eventually a style of communication and so on. But labeling these movements as a national populism or populism only, it is in reality helping them, because they're not even labeled anymore as extreme, but they're labeled as populist, and everyone is populist, from Ronald Reagan to Thatcher to Tony Blair to Silvio Berlusconi to German neo-Nazis, because some people build this type of categories, including all these people. Pan-European alliances like Wilders and Le Pen, when they got together, well, it's very new, something new. Well, it's not true, it's not new. Even if you look in the interwar years, there were streams of fascisms across Europe who had even ideologically an idea that fascism was European, if not universal. In the 50s, when the European integration started, the actual process of the European integration started, neo-fascists immediately felt they need to try to build their international pan-European association. And in the 50s, they created this European social movement. Then we have a number of other examples. So nothing new. Again, moderate, far-right, radicals, far right. Well, if we look at the history of the far right, there has been, since interwar fascism, some more moderate or conservative streams and some very anti-capitalistic one. So it's a variegated phenomenon, but we can consider it as part of the same party family, rather than believing that Marine Le Pen is different from many others. What I propose, what I suppose instead, is that what we are experiencing since the 80s to today is not a new party family, but is simply what I call the contemporarization of neo-fascism. So a political entity which tried to adapt to the challenges of the society, to the new political, social, and economic settings, because the majority of these parties realized that using the classic Nazi or fascist themes was not successful, because honestly, for almost 40 or so years, they didn't get any real electoral result, with a little exception here, there, 68, and so on. But the core was that society was changing in the Western world. And some of these parties, also with the help of some intellectual streams, got it right in the sense that they change and they contemporarize in a way. So another common theme, also linked with this idea of crisis, which we also often find in newspaper, almost every time that there is a success of the far right, is fascism back? So looking at from Marine Le Pen to Forza Nuova with Golden Dawn together, There is often this title or this commentator say is like in the 1930s. I mean, I think that historically is wrong because, I mean, fascism didn't start in the 1930s if we look at the evolution of fascism. It started slightly before. So we need to consider our understanding of history a bit more when we talk about these things. And the most common cases are the situation in Wall Street, the Great Depression, unemployment, and this helped the rise of fascism, surely. And so we are experiencing something today. In my personal view, I'm not an economist, as you were rightly saying, and I don't know a lot about economy. There has been other type of economic crisis in Europe without experiencing this rise of far-right parties. So let's see what happened in those years to see if we can draw some similarities or differences. The impact of the Great Depression was not similar in Italy and Germany first. So there is already a little difference to explain the rise or not rise of some of these phenomena, even if Italian fascism actually started before, so we cannot say what could have been happened if it was developed later. So, March on Rome movement resembling the old black shirts. Now, once more, in my view, is not a critique which I do, but the excessive views of the word fascism, which we often do, in reality, I am not 100% sure which is helping us, not just to understand the phenomenon, but also to fight the phenomenon and to gain public support in fighting it. Because then people expect that those modern far-right people are exactly the same as those in the interwar years, while carbon copies do not exist. They are existing in fictional novels, not in our reality. So, interwar fascism. Economy naturally played a role, but there are also other factors to be kept in mind. It was not just a crisis which said, okay, fascism arrived. No. If we look at the first country with the first fascism, well, the role of socialism, the fear of socialism, of the Bolshevik Revolution, of the trade unions, and so on, was key to understand the rise of Italian fascism, because traditionally it were feared and political parties were not too strong to understand that. There is also an issue of national identity, and I'm coming back on it, but also on nation state and nation building. So why this nation state and nation building? I mean, historically, it's not probably a case that fascism as a dictatorship developed in Italy and Germany, two young nations. So the process of nation building was not too strong. I mean, the economy is something which was out of it, part of it, but not certainly the central role. There was the need to build a national identity, a national pride, which was fundamentally missing in those countries. Citizens were not always feeling this strong relationship with their nation. They wanted something more. And fascism was also a response to the relative failure of liberal elites in building a national identity and eventually a national strength. Then there were lots of disagreements, especially in Italy, between the left-wing organizations. So there was not always a unified front against fascism. And then fascism, even if in its, let's say, variegated composition, immediately became the guardian of the status quo, the protector of the big business against the trade unions, against socialists, against the labor demands. I'm not 100% sure that today this type of neo-fascism, willing to isolate nation, willing to build little city-states, is really working with big business which want to be global in many ways. Then, I mean, once more, I'm not sure that this is 100% we can draw a strong similarity between the interwar years, because, I mean, once more, if we don't look at the impact of the First World War, for many historians, for many scholars, no First World War, no fascism after that, because how the what the war brought to Italian and German societies was massive, and the actual outcome of the war, treaties, Germany felt humiliated, Italy was winning, but was wanted something more in terms of territories. I mean, this is a big issue, probably more than economy itself, which can help us to understand the rise of fascism. So, today, no, in my personal view, there is no risk of a fascist takeover in Europe, which does not mean that we shouldn't map it. Quite on the contrary, because today is more difficult probably to depict who are the fascists and who are not the fascists, because there is a sort of legitimization and banalization, because there are links, and I'm intrigued to hear what it will be said in the panel on conservative and so on. There are at times links between the far right and conservatives. Now, the success of the far right, I mean, it's very hard to consider 20 or so years, but I mean, this success of the far right started before, didn't start with the economic crisis in Europe. So immigration was a big theme. And as I said before, the politicization of immigration. Radical Islam with 9/11. We see these parties moving from the Jewish community as the main enemy, then the immigrant after the colonization and the society, the multi-ethnic society. 9/11, Islam became the big theme, everyone against Islam, and so on. Then the role of traditional parties and their role in dealing with the far right. These parties becoming more legitimate political actors, media in some cases playing a strong role in legitimizing them and their teams, and then, and this is something which instead links with the contemporary economic crisis as well, we are in a phase of poor economic integration. So if Europe was built also in a way which had to, let's say, water down all nationalisms, today we see, on the other end, a very strong rise of national resentments among nations. This is an example of one of the meetings of the English Defence League in Aarhus with this big theme of Islam, and it was in reality a failure, this meeting, but it was just an example, because Islam is a big theme, and it's very good to mobilize parties across state borders. So the good environment in Western Europe, at least today, is that we are actually experiencing an ultra liberal political thought, which has been helping with his policy to destroy some of the pillars of our nation states, including the welfare state. There is the rise of, more generally, this is a very good book on that, there has been a rise since the 80s of an anti-fascism in a number of European countries. So if before anti-fascism was one of the key to understand also the building of a certain vision of the European Union, in a number of countries we see that in reality anti-fascist forces, not necessarily fascist, but also center-right and also center-left, which felt excluded by the role of communists in some countries and so on. But Berlin Wall, then this anti-fascist narrative became prominent in some nations, so undermining the role of anti-fascism somewhere. Then austerity, and I'm not denying the role of austerity at all, is helping eventually to strengthening some of the far-right agenda and appeal overall. Because what we see in Europe is the success of this of is the success of this economic monetarist economicist taught by the people that Krugman called the austerians, where everything has to be austerity, budget, and so on, strict budgetary measures, and so on. What this led is today we all know that there is no growth. There is strong unemployment, and in this situation is in some ways, unfortunately, normal, in my view, that there is a strong fight for people staying at the bottom of the social ladder, so including against immigrants, which became, again, a target. So basically are poor against poor other people fighting each other because the economic situation is not well, there are unemployment and so on. Now, this economic situation, as I said, is helping the far right, because the far right is often across countries now using a clear anti-austerity agenda. Now, I think that one of the problems perceived in a number of countries is that there is a perception, let's say, of a lack of democratic legitimacy in some of the European policies, imposing measures to Greece, to Spain, to Italy, and so on. Because, let's say, the idea is that a German politician has not been elected by an Italian citizen, so it's not clear why they should rule about you need to do this and you need to do that. And so there is this idea that, well, this is not true, this is not fair, at least. And the far right is immediately challenging all these ideas, trying to creep into what is traditionally perceived as a sort of more left-wing or center-left-wing approach against the Troika or against some of this economic thinking. So if you look at the propaganda of these parties, often now they talk about we want to build a different Europe, we want to give the power back to nation, and this is happening at different levels, from the so-called populist to grassroots movements. Now, I have just a couple of examples from Italy and I end my talk. Okay, this is basically the center-right. I missed something? No. Yes. Okay. So this is, for example, a pretty young, pretty recent movement who was created in Italy, once more using the same name of European social movement, based in Rome. And they all often talk about Europe. We need a Euro rebellion. They try to build. They believe that Europe has to include Russia, which is the new capital of this European empire. There are lots of links with apparently Putin and some of his people. They are building. I mean, this is a mostly a youth movement. They are trying to build links with many other parties or grassroots movement across Europe. And as I said, this is just a little example. But what I found more interesting is that, especially in Italy, there are also some of the other parties. Now, probably you're not aware of this name of some of these movements, but fundamentally, all the people involved in these posters are or former or currently within Silvio Berlusconi's party. So all these movements, which are in and out the mainstream center-right in Italy, are probably part of this wider neo-fascist network in Europe. And they are trying to get close to Marine Le Pen. And the huge problem here is that these parties are not even considered as far right. And I think that one of the problems is certainly the role of Berlusconi and all these things, anti-fascism in Italy, but is also that even in Italy we probably insisted too much on someone is fascist only if it has a black shirt, and there is the March on Rome and the fear of Mussolini again. Thank you very much.